The Feminine Mystique by Betty Friedan. Chapter 1, The Problem That Has No Name. The problem lay buried, unspoken, for many years in the minds of American women. It was a strange stirring, a sense of dissatisfaction, a yearning that women suffered in the middle of the 20th century in the United States. Each suburban wife struggled with it alone. She made the beds, shopped for groceries, matched slipcover material, ate peanut butter sandwiches with her children, chauffeured Cub Scouts and brownies, lay beside her husband at night. She was afraid to even ask herself the silent question, "Is this all?" For over 15 years, there was no word of this yearning in the millions of words written about women, for women, in all the columns, books, and articles by experts telling women their role was to seek fulfillment as wives and mothers. Over and over, women heard in voices of tradition and of Freudian sophistication that they should desire no greater destiny than the glory in their own femininity. Experts told them how to catch a man and keep him, how to breastfeed children and handle their toilet training, how to cope with sibling rivalry and adolescent rebellion, how to buy a dishwasher, bake bread, cook gourmet snails, and buy swimming pools with their own hands, how to dress, look, and act more feminine and make marriage more exciting, how to keep their husbands from dying young and their sons from growing into delinquents. They were taught to pity the neurotic, unfeminine, unhappy women who wanted to be poets or physicians or presidents. They learned that truly feminine women do not want careers, higher education, political rights, the independence and the opportunities of the old-fashioned feminists fought for. Some women in their 40s and 50s still remembered painfully giving up those dreams, but most of the younger women no longer even thought about them. 1,000 expert voices applauded their femininity, their adjustment, their new maturity. All they had to do was devote their lives from the earliest girlhood to finding a husband and bearing children. The suburban housewife, she was the dream image of the young American woman and the envy, it was said, of women all over the world. The American housewife, freed by science and labor-saving appliances from the druggery, the dangers of childbirth and the illnesses of her grandmother. She was healthy, beautiful, educated, concerned only about her husband, her children, her home. She found true feminine fulfillment. As a housewife and mother, she was respected as a full and equal partner to man in this world. She was free to choose automobiles, clothes, appliances, supermarkets. She had everything that women ever dreamed of. In the 15 years after World War II, this mystique of feminine fulfillment became the cherished and self-perpetuating core of the contemporary American culture. Millions of women lived their lives in the image of those pretty pictures of American suburban housewife, kissing their husbands goodbye in front of the picture window, depositing their station wagon full of children at school, and smiling as they ran the new electric waxer over the spotless kitchen floor. They baked their own bread, sewed their own in their children's clothes, kept their new washing machines and dryers running all day. They changed the sheets on the beds twice a week instead of once, took the rug class in adult education, and pitied the poor, frustrated mothers who had dreamed of having a career. Their only dream was to be the perfect wives and mothers. Their highest ambition is to have 5 children and a beautiful house. Their only fight to get to keep their husbands. They had no thought for the unfeminine problems of the world outside the home. They wanted the men to make the major decisions. They glorified their role as women and wrote proudly on the census blank, occupation, housewife. If a woman had a problem in the 50s and 60s, I knew that something must be wrong with her marriage or with herself. Other women were satisfied with their lives, she thought. What kind of woman was she that she did not feel this mysterious fulfillment waxing the kitchen floor? She was so ashamed to admit her dissatisfaction that she never knew how many other women shared it. If she tried to tell her husband, he didn't understand what she was talking about. She did not really understand it herself. Gradually, I came to realize that the problem that has no name was shared by countless women in America. Just what was this problem that has no name? What were the words women used when they tried to express it? Sometimes a woman would say, "I feel empty, somehow, incomplete." Or she would say, "I feel as if I don't exist." Sometimes a woman would tell me that the feeling gets so strong she runs out of the house and walks through the streets. Or she stays inside her house and cries. Or her children tell her a joke and she doesn't laugh because she doesn't hear it. I talked to women who had spent years on this analyst couch, working out their adjustment to the feminine role, their blocks to fulfillment as a wife and mother. But the desperate tone in those women's voices and the looks in their eyes was the same as the tone and the look of other women who were sure they had no problem, even though they did have a strange feeling of desperation. A mother of four who left college at 19 to get married told me, "I've tried everything women are supposed to do, hobbies, gardening, pickling, canning, being very social with my neighbors, joining committees, running PTATs. I can do it all, and I like it. But it doesn't leave you anything to think about, a feeling of who you are. I never had any career ambitions. All I wanted was to get married and have four children. I love the kids and Bob and my home. There's no problem you can ever put a name to. But I'm desperate. I begin to feel I have no personality. I'm a server of food and a putter on of pants and a bed maker, someone who could be called on when you want something. But who am I? It's as if ever since you were a little girl, there's always somebody or something that will take care of your life. Your parents or college or falling in love or having a child or moving to a new house. Then you wake up one morning and there's nothing to look forward to." A young wife in Long Island Development said, "I seem to sleep so much. I don't know why I should be so tired. This house isn't nearly so hard to clean as the cold water hat we had when I was working. The children at school all day. It's not the work. I just don't feel alive." I began to see in this strange new light the American return to early marriage and the large families that were causing the population explosion. The recent movement to natural childbirth and breastfeeding, suburban conformity, and the new neurosis, character pathologies, and sexual problems being reported by the doctors. I began to see new dimensions to old problems that have long been taken for granted among women. Menstrual difficulties, sexual frigidity, promiscuity, pregnancy fears, childbirth depression, the high incidence of emotional breakdown and suicide among women in their 20s and 30s. The menopause crises. The so-called passivity of immaturity of American men, the discrepancy between women's tested intellectual abilities in childhood and their adult achievement, the challenging incidence of adult sexual orgasm in American women, and persistent problems in psychotherapy and women's education. If I'm right, the problem that has no name stirring in the minds of so many women today is not a matter of loss of femininity or too much education, or the demands of domesticity. It is far more important than anyone recognizes. It is the key to those other new and old problems which have been torturing women and their husbands and children and puzzling their doctors and educators for years. It may well be that the key to our future is a nation and culture. We can no longer ignore that voice within women that says, "I want something more than my husband and my children and my home."